We train less and rest more than we ever have. And we're seeing the benefits of less overuse injuries, less mental fatigue and burnout. And we just look more fresh in a lot of these matches.
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level. On the line today is Jeff Nuvolo. Jeff is the associate head coach for University of South Carolina women's tennis. He's the 2018 ITA National Assistant Head Coach of the Year and has previously spent time with Air Force in Alabama. Jeff is here to discuss topics including the end of no pain, no gain training, how data can help avoid overtraining, and the differences between international and U.S. athletes. Let's get started with your host, head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this fifth edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast. First off, Jeff, great to have you here and congrats on the season.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off as we usually do. Give us a little background on your career and how you ended up at the University of South Carolina.
Well, just finished my 11th season coaching college tennis. It started at my alma mater, which is Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. I was lucky enough to have my college mentor and coach, Bill Richards, offer me the position. I'd stayed on as a volunteer. He said, well, why don't you just come back next year? You can get your master's, be the grad assistant. And I just thought it was too good of a deal to pass up and a good way to get into coaching. From there, I went to the University of Alabama. I wanted to see what life was like at a Power 5 school and see that big athletic department environment up close. And I went there as a volunteer initially and was then promoted to assistant coach second semester. And then at the end of that season, the head coach went to a different school. My wife and I both got jobs in Colorado. So we were at the United States Air Force Academy for two seasons, coaching the men's team there. And that was a big change from Alabama, but an incredible two seasons. And from there, wanted another shot at the SEC. And Kevin Epley, who was actually going to take the Alabama assistant job instead of me. He was selected to take that position when I was still at Alabama as the volunteer, and I made a phone call to him begrudgingly saying how excited I was that he got the job and I was going to learn so much from him and just wanted to make a good impression. And luckily, I think I did, because 2 years later, he said, once I found out you were interested in coaching at South Carolina, I remembered that phone call, and it was a good lesson to be learned. But that's how I started at South Carolina. And from there, we've just been trying to build a team that could win the Southeastern Conference. And we were lucky enough last year. We played for it a couple times. This last season, we were fortunate enough to win the SEC Tournament Championship. So it was a great season, and it's been an amazing 11 years.
So I guess you're kind of happy you made that phone call, aren't you?
Somebody told me, they said, you've got to call him and just sound really excited that he's coming. And I think I sent him notes on players on the team too. I really was going for it. I think I overdid it probably, but I'm ecstatic I made that phone call. Looking back on it, the last 5 years at South Carolina, along with every other stop, but the last 5 years at South Carolina have been amazing. He gave me an opportunity to coach on the women's side, something I'd never done. So it was a bit of a leap of faith on his end. And we've really enjoyed every step of the way. It's been a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
So it sounds like the SEC kind of really gave you a bug that, you know, you're up at Ball State and then also Colorado Springs, but it seemed like you really wanted to get back into it.
I just think there's something about, if you want to learn and you want to get better, it's just the continual nature of being tested. Every weekend, you're playing a team that's good enough to be in the round of 16. And in many cases, you're playing a team that's good enough to win a national championship. You just keep going to work. You just have to look for that next step every time you go to play. If you take a day off, if you take a match off, you're going to pay. And there's something that's, I use the word addicting about that. And once you get into it, it's hard to get out. And also, the support we get from our university, support we get from the community at large is really special as well. And you don't necessarily see that everywhere.
Okay, excellent. Sounds like you're all set up in Columbia there.
Oh, yeah.
And so now, as associate head coach at South Carolina, what is your day-to-day role? Give us a little insight here.
My day-to-day role covers a lot of different areas of the program. Being in my fifth season at the same place, Kevin and I developed a lot of autonomy in terms of how we go about our day and how we handle things. I'm generally the lead recruiter. I'll manage that database and the initial contacts and a good amount of the travel. I have been pretty aggressive in trying to get us to do more heart rate training, more data tracking. So that's been something that's kind of fallen under my wing in terms of working with strength and conditioning, working with our outside consultant, Paul Drake, who initially educated us on heart rate zone training and other things. I mean, obviously training the athletes, individual workouts, team practice in the afternoon, and just the overall direction of the program. It's a real collaboration. You know, it's over the last 5 years, we've kind of defined our values, behaviors, and the outcomes we hope to achieve from those. And just the direction of the program, the nuts and bolts of it, compliance, all the fun stuff, good amount of paperwork. So that's my day-to-day is like a lot of other coaches, you're wearing a lot of different hats.
Okay. You mentioned that you kind of one of the, basically the lead recruiter there. And so I've noticed you have a strong international presence on your squad. What, if any, differences do you see between those international players and the U.S. athletes?
That is a great question. I think one thing you see from the internationals is, first, it's great to expose our American athletes to international cultures. I think it's excellent to see different training foundations, different worldviews. I think it's great to see that. They tend to be very mature, not that the American athletes are immature, but there's a little bit more of, I think the schooling is tough over in Europe. We have a number of Europeans. They come to school and they're very, very focused on their studies. They didn't grow up watching football games on TV, and they don't necessarily understand South Carolina and Clemson as a big rivalry necessarily, but they're making a bigger move. Mom and dad aren't just up the road or quick plane flight away. So I think once they make this decision, it's generally a decision that they've come to. It's something that they weren't looking at their whole lives. So there's a lot of thought that goes into it, and we've had incredible international student athletes in terms of the student portion as well as the athlete. So I don't know if that answers your question directly. They're generally very mature and ready to go.
Definitely talking about different school systems there, and a lot of the athletes I've spoken to, they don't say it's not necessarily easy, but it's easier than kind of the programs that they've been to. And so, and kind of with those international students and the success you've had over the last few years, the most current run of success, what do you kind of put this down to right now?
I think as a program, we found a way to differentiate ourselves in some ways. We are a very loud and assertive group of young women. We've been told to be quiet by people and officials, and people tend to complain. And we always respond with, yeah, I've never heard a men's team be told to be quiet. So we're just going to keep doing what we do.
Nice.
And so starting with that, and that's a reflection of the culture that the student athletes have been a part of building as well. We take pride in being tough, enthusiastic, disciplined, and selfless. And this year's team, as well as the teams that have been building, have just gotten better and better at personifying our culture on the court with each season. So I think that's been a big part of it, just the culture. We had a very compelled group of young women this year. When we were playing Georgia in the SEC championship, there was a feeling of camaraderie that they were going to get it done for each other down the stretch. And you could sense it on those courts. And so that was really special. But then from a training perspective, I think we realized as we look back, and this will tie into how we've been using First Beat as well, but we train less and rest more than we ever have. And we're seeing the benefits of less overuse injuries, less mental fatigue and burnout, and we just look more fresh in a lot of these matches. Those two things have been huge for us in terms of just group of young people coming together, taking the reins and leading each other as a team, not just from the coaches, just the team coming together and leading one another, as well as we've changed the way we train a little bit. And I think some other people are a little behind in that regard.
So it sounds like there's just an established attitude and confidence that comes when playing against the South Carolina women's tennis program.
I think we have a presence. I think there's a way that we carry ourselves and people know what they're in for. And when we play the Vanderbilts, the Georgias, and the Floridas, that's the similar thing. When we know what to expect. They're going to be tough as nails, and we're going to have to try to be just as tough and outlast them. So along with so many of the other great programs and teams in our league.
Nice. I like that approach. And kind of, you already touched on this, and I wanted to get back to it. The philosophy, you're actually training less, recovering more. So as access to science and data has increased, is this old school mentality, is it finally dying off? The no pain, no gain, you just have to want it type mentality?
I think so. And if it's not, if people are choosing not to change with the times, they're going to find themselves in a really tough situation with their student athletes. Kevin and I have been talking over the last few years about how do we proactively answer the question, why? Because nowadays in this culture, and I'm not far removed from it, I'm only 33 years old, but if I want to know something, I just type it in. I can find my explanations on Wikipedia, Google. I mean, you find it overnight in 2 seconds. But so we've really tried in all areas of our program to educate and emphasize how it's going to make you a better tennis player on the front end, not just run because I said so. Or the thing that I think we also found is if you run to build toughness, eventually you're just going to break a body down anyway. So that you can be as mentally tough as you want. If you tear something, you can't play. If you have a chronic overuse injury, that's just something in our sport. We're not necessarily an acute injury sport, but we do deal with chronic injuries and overuse injuries.
Exactly. So it sounds like you're staying away from the, well, we saw this or they're doing this type. You've actually got something behind everything that you're going to do.
100%. And generally speaking, when we go out to practice, we've talked about what we're doing that day and what the goals are. And we'll probably circle back and talk about whether or not we accomplished them.
luckily, we
haven't had to do too much of that. We've got a great practice culture and student athletes that work real hard.
All right. And kind of flipping the script a bit, if we switch over to First Beat here, you're in your third season now with First Beat, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Was there anything in particular that attracted you to First Beat's technology?
With the other products we had tried using before, the range of the monitors was not sufficient. So the first thing I noticed was, well, first off, the footprint of a 12-court tennis facility is much bigger than people realize. Mm-hmm. And so once we set up the antenna and the computer and we were trying it out, I realized I was getting the data from all six courts from one end to the other. And that was something that with prior technologies, I was setting up numerous things to try to keep the connection going. So that was the first thing. And even, you know, before we used to do this mile run and we would set up the First Beat in just on one end of the track and I didn't have to run around. It's like running around with the girls the year before trying to keep the connection going. So that was a huge benefit. So that was initially, and along with that, the interface, the screen itself and the information that we could get just by looking at it. And then the way it tracked the data and saved it and emailed it to us, I just thought it was like a one-stop shop. Yeah, I turned it on, looked at it occasionally, got the data, didn't have to spend a lot of time checking up on things, ultimately.
I got to say, I'm actually really happy that I helped you not having to chase after your players to keep a connection there. So
I'm not as fast as I used to be. So I wasn't keeping up very well, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, can you just get into a bit of how do you use it? I mean, is it day-to-day, games, practices, and then kind of the metrics you focus on?
Well, the first thing we realized to get the whole thing started, we actually do an off-site VO2 max. So we get all the data prior to truly using the First Beat during the season. So we have everybody's correct information going in. I've had people tell me they just plugged in everybody's 220 minus their age. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not going to be any data that you can really use. But and to your credit, First Beat software will adjust once it sees different numbers and everything, which is another great thing that it does. But ultimately, we realized how hard practice was. That was one of the biggest things. So the training impact piece, the 1-5 scale, we were having all these practices where we were realizing we're working really hard. We don't need to be running after practice today if the whole team's in a 4, 4.5 scenario. So that was really big. That was the initial thing that brought to our attention. When we do our conditioning, we focus exclusively on the zones. So if we say start in zone 2 and work up to your zone 4, we plug in the First Beat system. It looks crystal clear on a big TV. You create that orange theory or group fitness activity type deal for the team. And everybody's getting their individualized workouts and they can see their tile on the screen. So that's huge for us because we're very detail oriented in terms of how we train. And then lastly, it's been huge in avoiding some what I would call catastrophic events in terms of dehydration, overtraining. We are looking at the monitor and somebody looks a little bit off in practice and you see that during warmup they're at 192 beats per minute. They shouldn't be anywhere near there. We could pull them out of practice and ask them a couple questions. And one time we had somebody who was severely dehydrated and was probably a minute or two away from a big time cramping situation, which probably would have pulled her out of practice for a few days afterwards. And luckily we were able to intervene in time because of that technology being present and the data being available at all times.
So you've definitely had some data influence training decisions then.
100%. There's days before a match where we go, gosh, we look, everybody's up in their fourth zone and it's 105 degrees outside here in Columbia. We got to cut this practice. We got to really wrap things up. We've had moments like that. Other things in terms of, you know, in match play, we've noticed people don't recover in between points. It's one of those things where you can see them fade in the match, but then you can also show them what's happening to them and to their body as the match is going on. And so it's a good way to demonstrate things without using subjectivity. If I say things like, I feel like you're getting tired, or I feel like you're not in great shape, which I would never actually say it that way, but yeah. I feel like you can improve. Well, no, here's the printout from your match. You can tell from the second set on, you were spending you can see with the way a tennis match works, there's these peaks and valleys like any sport, but we have these clear, like, here's the changeover. Well, at the changeover, you never got back down to your second zone. and then you went back out again, and you're back pushing your lactate threshold for, you know, 12 minutes at a time, we've got to get you to where you can recover faster, and then we'll have some intervention in terms of how we're going to train.
So it sounds like having this objective data has actually been a pretty big role, as far as, like you just said, instead of saying, hey, you're not looking so hot out there, and getting, you know, some kind of a different response, you can pull up some data and show them why. So it sounds like they bought in pretty well. How has the player buy-in been for this?
I think it's been fantastic. We also have them send us their morning resting heart rates, and just that's just another metric. We like to get it right when they wake up. And from August until May, they only on 11 separate instances did they not turn in their morning resting heart rate.
Wow.
So when I say compelled and bought in, that's really what first thing you do when you wake up is think, I've got to turn in my resting heart rate to coach. That's phenomenal buy-in. So in the spring, candidly, we don't use it as much during matches. Want to alleviate maybe a couple distractions if it's super hot and the monitor slips a little bit, which they're actually in very, very good monitors, but just, hey, it's the season time. We're gonna let you not wear the monitor during the match. But generally in practice and in matches in the fall, they're wearing those monitors.
So you obviously have great compliance if they're turning in their resting heart rates. Kind of on the same note, so they're doing stuff away from the practice facility. Is the player lifestyle and routine something you kind of consider for that time they're away from you guys?
As long as it's not detrimental to what we're doing, then we're very supportive of their pursuits. And we have great student athletes. Our team GPA was a 3.85 this semester.
Wow.
So they're very focused. And the funny thing about morning resting heart rate is it can also indicate what your activities are like in the evenings. So our girls were incredibly consistent throughout the whole season in terms of getting enough sleep, eating well. For example, my heart rate was a little higher this morning, and I think it might have been the Little Caesars pizza. I think that might have been it. I'm just going to go out on a limb that anything you can just pick up for $5 is not something that should be going into your body. But it was a long day, and I'm going to just move on with my life. So, but they were very dialed in. And as long as they're coming to practice and workouts with the mentality of getting better and giving everything they have, we don't interfere too much with a lot of that stuff. But it's definitely something that they're doing a great job of. So we don't have to.
Okay, yeah, and I got to agree with that. The $5 pizza can be your best friend and your worst enemy in the same 24 hours, right?
It looked great initially. I got to be honest. It was one of those, the 15 minutes afterwards, I had to come to grips with what I had just done to myself. And that's never a great feeling.
Any advice you'd give to a coach, a tennis coach that's possibly looking to add a player monitoring system?
Do it and learn as you go. We are still perfecting this. You know, we're going to strive for perfection. We've progressed a lot in the last 3 years, and we've had multiple inputs from people to help us with that, whether it's the First Beat staff, whether it's Paul Drake at First Cardio, who initially educated us on this and has helped us with our workouts and stuff of that nature. Just start doing it. Don't get wrapped up in, oh, and if your team says, well, I don't want to wear the monitor, explain why they're wearing the monitor. Explain what you're trying to do. We've avoided so many issues by just having a little bit more attention to detail than in the past. And the thing you're going to find is that it's going to alleviate that, I feel like we need to work hard today. I feel something. As coaches, just like players, we have emotions. We have things that we have what we used to do is constantly running through our mind. And there's been times where Kevin and I will say, I feel like we need to do this today. And we'll get the resting heart rates. We'll look at the first 25 minutes of practice. I'll look at Kevin and we'll go, hey, we're not doing bikes today. We don't need to do that. It really removes that. We get out of our own way sometimes. We'll just put it that way.
So it almost seems like it kind of helps with that emotion that when you're upset and you want to give them a little running for punishment, you can look at the data and go, well, that's actually not going to do any good for us.
And I think running for punishment in 2019 is not going to do any good for anyone. just those days, as fun as they were when we were younger, it's going to hurt them at some point. It might not hurt you that much, but you're putting a load on. If you're running on a tennis court to punish in a sport that's already plyometric and endurance, high intensity, if you're choosing to run more on that hard surface, you might not pay for it that weekend. But you'll see for a lot of teams as the season goes on, these players, they start to look like mummies with the amount of K-tape and bandages that are on these bodies. It's like, we've really been lucky. I mean, not lucky. I hate to use that word. We've been fortunate that by introducing some data, we're wearing a lot less than some of the other teams.
All right. Excellent. And yeah, finally, after this record-breaking season, what's next for Gamecocks tennis? I mean, you've obviously taken the next step. You just signed the number one recruiting class for the 2019 season. What's next year? What's coming next year for the Gamecocks tennis program?
We've had the mindset that we've got to take another step forward for the last five seasons, and I don't think that changes. The thing that's great about this program and the way that our players have bought in is it's never been about breaking records. It's never been about winning championships. It's been about our value system. It's been about getting better and helping each other get better. And as long as we stay on that path, more good things are going to come.
All right. Great stuff. Well, hey, I just want to thank you again for coming doing this episode with us today. We really appreciate you coming out.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope more people start monitoring their teams.
All right. Thank you for listening to this episode. And if you enjoyed it, feel free to drop a review on iTunes and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533. Or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.